Hello, and welcome again to Catholic Answers Focus. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we are in the midst of our series looking at how to develop strong local Catholic communities. This week we speak with Dr. Jarrett Stout. Dr. Stout works in the Office of Evangelization and Family Ministries for the Archdiocese of Denver, and he's the author of a forthcoming book, The Beer Option: What We Can Learn from Brewing Monks. Dr. Jarrett Stout, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure.
I stole a little bit of my intro wording from a piece you wrote in Those Catholic Men, this idea of developing strong local Catholic communities. And you were referring there, because that is what we're doing in this series, but it also you were referring to the Rod Dreher's The Benedict Option has spawned a lot of efforts to kind of focus on different spiritualities that might help us do that. Is that what you're doing in The Beer Option?
Yeah, absolutely. Rather than proposing a different kind of option, I'm saying, okay, the Benedictines are a great model of Catholic culture and local community, just bringing people around the monastery. But let's look at one aspect of how they did that. And, you know, I think beer is a great angle into Benedictine hospitality. The Benedictine monks really began a modern brewing as we know it today, you know, the kind of the way that we do it versus the way ancient people did it in Egypt and Mesopotamia. And so the monks really drew people together through beer, and they would serve the poor and pilgrims and other guests and themselves with their brewing.
And so now, what's your, are you have any connection with the Benedictines, or have you been to one of these brewing monasteries?
Yes, I am a Benedictine oblate at Clear Creek Abbey in Oklahoma, and so I definitely am very immersed in the Benedictine tradition. And, you know, I may have sampled, you know, a good amount of Benedictine beer and visited, you know, a few monasteries through the years. And I'm actually going to be leading a pilgrimage at the end of October through northern France and Belgium, and we're going to be visiting six different brewing monasteries on the pilgrimage.
So there's a kind of I guess beer gives us thoughts of a kind of conviviality, maybe a kind of maybe merriment. It's a kind of a merry beverage. In that is that part of what you're trying to get at, that community, if we really want the kind of community that Rod Dreher is pointing to in the Benedict Option, there needs to be some of that.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the case. I mean, if you read Joseph Pieper's book, In Tune with the World on Festivity, you know, he says basically we gather together on special days to really affirm the goodness of life, of the world, and of the Creator, and that music, dancing, and food and drink are all part of this festivity. And if we look back at our tradition, we really see that. You know, people come together and hopefully in moderation are drinking to celebrate, and it draws people together. Even in the Middle Ages, there was something called a parish ale, and, you know, things don't really change, right? It was the big fundraiser for the parish, and it was on the parish's, you know, feast day, you know, of the patron saint of the parish. And so, yeah, we definitely see in the Catholic tradition that beer has fostered this conviviality, as you were saying, or festivity, as Pieper describes it. And so, yes, it's definitely something that draws us together.
And would you agree that a part of the problem that we face, and I do think Dreher is trying to address this, but many others are as well, is the increasing, yes, we're all in contact all the time via social media, but we're also increasingly isolated.
Mm-hmm. And so just as I kind of look back in the tradition to the monks and how they got brewing going and everything, I also look at, okay, what's happened the last couple hundred years with brewing? And there's been a big consolidation, mass breweries, and it kind of goes along with the mass economy and the mass state. And when you have that collectivization, it ironically leads to individualism. Everyone is so isolated. And brewing actually is an example of trying to bring things back to the local level. So home brewing and these microbrews were actually illegal until the late 70s, 79, and then there was deregulation in 1980. And so people started home brewing, and we saw all these local breweries popping up. And so it started chipping away at these huge consolidated breweries, and we were actually down to like 40 breweries in the country. And now we're up to about 4,000 breweries. And so people are gathering locally, and they're supporting local economy. and local ingredients, and where they're brewing in their own homes and inviting people over. And so brewing does show us that, yes, you know, we can start forming local community again.
And what does this say, too, about, I mean, you kind of have a thing here about you draw lessons, I guess, Benedictine lessons from the Benedictine brewing tradition. And and you do say this idea of self-sufficiency and local economy. This really was – that's what the Benedictines were, where they were kind of the hub of a local economy. That sounds a little bit crunchy, you know, like the do you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Farm to table and all that. Are these ideas that seem so current? Are they really medieval Christian ideas just come around again?
Well, I think we are reacting to the artificiality of modern culture, and we are desiring something that maybe we did have in the past. And, you know, when it comes to the Benedictines, though, I think there's a very healthy tension. You know, the reason why Saint Benedict tells them to be self-sufficient is basically so that they don't have too much contact with the world. But the irony is, once they really develop their own self-sustaining economy, everyone around them began depending upon them. And so these monasteries where people were coming to flee from the world actually became very much open to the world and, you know, serving all these pilgrims and the local poor, and they were actually helping to train people in the local economy. And I think we're really looking for something similar today, right? People want more meaningful work. People want to be, you know, not passive in modern economy and culture, but we want to be creators. We want to actually make things. And so, yeah, the monks are a great model of that. And a lot of people, and I've done this as well, have looked to the monastery as a model for the home economy, for home culture, maybe a little bit more what the parish could be like, you know, with people being active and coming together and building community there. So I think, you know, we also experience the same tension. You know, we want to be in the world but not of the world. We want to, you know, be focused on heaven as our true home. And yet while we're here, you know, we want to be shaping the world and perfecting the world, you know, based on the commands that God has given us at the very beginning to subdue the earth and to till and care for the garden. So we have this vocation in us to shape the earth, but we also don't want to be too attached to it. And so the monks show us that right balance.
And I imagine I'm not a great connoisseur of beers and things, but I imagine that in the years since we had 40 breweries and to today where we have 4,000, the quality has probably gone up as well. And when you're making mass products, there's a certain way in which there is a least common denominator factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I call it the Bud Light culture. You know,
yeah.
You could call it the Mick culture as well. It's just that everything becomes fast and easy. It's not demanding. And so, you know, in the book, I talk about, you know, kind of developing our own palate. You know, and I think that it's not just about beer and not becoming like a foodie, right? You know, where you become like a snob with what you eat or drink. But it's about being able to appreciate the world that God has given us and to be able to appreciate culture and what we bring to the world and how we shape it. And I think we have to develop this sense of seeing the beauty of the world, appreciating the beauty of the world, not as an end in itself, but as something that helps us to glimpse, you know, maybe in a faint way, even God himself, his beauty and his perfection and how we participate in that. So I think it is very important. We want to move out of everything being simple and easy and too accessible, and moving into things that are more complex and difficult and that we have to kind of rise up to. Now, that said, you know, there are certain beers that may be difficult for people to try at first, but I've never seen anyone who did not like Trappist beer, you know, like bringing out a Chimay Blue, for instance, and, you know, you give that to somebody and they're just blown away. They're like, I had no idea beer could even taste like that, because all they were used to was, you know, the Bud Light taste.
Yeah. So where does that quality come from? That quality of, I mean, it's so important that the local side of it and all that, as we're thinking about building communities, by definition, real communities really can't be massive movements. They have to be local phenomena. But what is it about that makes us bring out quality? Is it that you know, that that we don't have to just market to the, you know, to the least sophisticated palate, that we can try new things? Is it a kind of liberation of being local?
I think there's a quality of being an artist here.
When
the home brewing movement got started, that was really the foundation for these new microbrewers. People were brewing because they loved it, and they were brewing because they wanted other people to come and appreciate what they created. And, you know, when you get these large companies, they become about, you know, the bottom line. Everything is about, you know, making profit. And, you know, people brew, you know, if they go into business because they want to be successful and they want to support themselves and to do well. But nonetheless, I think when these smaller brewers got going, it was really for love of brewing, you know, and they wanted to see what kind of taste could they discover. You know, I mean, beer is very simple in the sense that it's, you know, water, barley, hops, and yeast, these basic ingredients. And of course, you can add some other things in here and there, but to think of all the complexity of flavor that you can bring out of these four basic ingredients, it really is amazing, and it is beautiful. And so I think this new brewing movement is really just trying to see, okay, what can we do? You know, what can we create with these ingredients?
And the sense of then being drawn into a community, like that, it just seems to me that we are consumers maybe more than we are participants in a highly efficient culture. Is it part of your agenda to move us out of just simply being in the consumer category and get us into being more the participant category?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, as many people know, I mean, the word economics comes from the management of the home, of the household. And so brewing is a lot of fun. You know, I've done it a few times. I'm not an expert home brewer, but, you know, you get people together and you're working on this project together. And even my kids got involved in the process and were fascinated just to see how it all developed. And so I think it's true. We can be creators, not just consumers. You know, consumerism just wants us to kind of blindly spend and get into this cycle. And I think it's important to break out of it. Say, let's have contact, you know, with nature and raw materials, and let's implore our creativity and see what we can create. You know, it's not just beer, but in many other areas as well. You know, I've even been very enriched just by getting into gardening, you know, with my family. And so there's just little ways in which, you know, we can be economic creators. I think it's very important.
And because it's fascinating, the beer, you say in this article that you had in those Catholic Men, it's in the 800s. What we normally think of, frankly, is in a kind of prejudicial way as the Dark Ages. Ooh, the spooky Dark Ages. There's these monks that really invent a new thing in the world. This didn't exist in the world before these monks.
Well, so beer is very ancient. I mean, it goes all the way back to the beginnings of civilization. But the way that people made beer in, say, ancient Mesopotamia and then Egypt is that they would bake barley loaves. They would twice bake them. And then they would let them just soak in water and just naturally ferment. They didn't know anything about, you know, yeast as we know it today. That was actually not until Louis Pasteur where we understood yeast. And they would flavor this beer with dates and figs and grapes, because grapes had yeast in it, and so they kind of figured out that they put grapes in there. But when we think of beer today, you know, we think of it, you know, clear, crisp, you know, and brewed with hops. This is the creation of the monks, the kind of beer that we drink today. And the first hopped beer, as you said, began in the 800s in the Frankish kingdom. So it's really the area around Paris where we see it. And actually, one of the first recordings is the St. Vandrea Abbey in northern France. It's on my itinerary with the beer pilgrimage. But they just went back to brewing in the last 2 years. And so this is part of this beer revolution. It's not just local, you know, home brews or micro brews, but we also see the monks going back to brewing. You know, the Norcia monks in Italy, of course, the Great Trappist in Belgium, but there's also about five monasteries in the U.S., Benedictine monasteries, that are brewing again. And so when I see, you know, this example of, okay, one of the first places to use hops in history is now going back to brewing themselves, finally, I mean, it's kind of a neat moment. you know, in Catholic culture and Benedictine history.
It's something, too, that it comes at the very beginning of what we kind of call the medieval period, or before what we think of as the High Middle Ages and the Late Middle Ages, where so many advances. It's like almost like beer is at the very root of all this development of Christendom, I guess. There's beer throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, it is kind of neat, and that's one of the things that really blew me away, is that the more I researched my book, is the more I just kept seeing, you know, that beer is there. Right? You know, the monasteries spread to Northern Europe, and they're developing beer. And, you know, you even see it in the lives of the saints. You know, you see the great missionaries from Ireland coming over to the continent, like St. Columban, for instance, spread monastic brewing throughout Northern Europe and actually performed 3 beer miracles, you know, in his life. And then, you know, you see it tied in to the holy days and the celebrations and even parish life, as I mentioned. And so once I started looking for beer in history, it was amazing how much I actually was able to discover it.
The book is called The Beer Option, What We Can Learn from Brewing Monks, expected to be out at the end of this month, at the end of September. Dr. Jared Stout is the author, and he is our guest. He is also a member of the Office for Evangelization and Family Life Ministries in the Archdiocese of Denver. At the root, I don't know if you would say this, but I'll say it, and then I want to get your comment on it. But at the root of what might be the modern malaise is a lack, a shortage of humane conversation, that what makes life most humane and human is conversation. So that's my assertion. It strikes me that the beer option is calling people back to conversation.
Yeah, you know, and once again, we have to strike the right balance. You know, What happens if you drink too much? Right, you become a loner. Nobody wants to be around you, right? You
know? Right.
But if you drink in moderation and it's directly ordered towards the glory of God, you know, we drink to praise Him. That's part of the history of the toast, is actually trying to praise God and give a blessing through the drink. So when we come together, it's rightly ordered in friendship. I think that yes, drinking does help us to really enter into a deeper conversation. It really does kind of foster this conversation and center us, you know, in community. So I think beer is one part of that picture. And, you know, one year I was inspired, you know, to give up beer just as a sacrifice. And I have to say it was the loneliest year of my life, you know, because, you know, it's not that, you know, I hope that my friends only wanted to get together to drink. But, you know, it really does just help us to come together and open us up in that conversation. And, you know, after one or two drinks, you know, you just really kind of feel loosened up and even inspired, I think, to enter into the conversation more deeply.
It seems also with the beer option that there's kind of what strikes me as very Catholic kind of refusal to invite people into some great mass movement. It seems more like change the daily habits of life. That's what over time makes your life worth living, makes your life an invitation for other people to live a really human life. And then I guess in the great movement of things, that's what builds culture.
That's right. I mean, we have to be honest, right? Unfortunately, just drinking beer is not going to transform our culture overnight. But what I'm trying to do in the beer option is just point to the little things. You know, we get very frustrated, and rightly so, over the big things. You know, we want to change our culture. We want to renew things. And yet, you know, when it actually comes down to it, renewal happens by intentionally shaping and directing our life according to what is true, good, and beautiful. And, you know, Catholic culture is all-encompassing. You know, we're body, soul, beings. We're cultural beings. And so beer has its role. It has, you know, a particular place. And, you know, I could have written, instead of the beer option, you know, probably many other options, too, of these little angles of looking at an integrated and complete Catholic life.
You can find Dr. Jared Stout's writing regularly at Those Catholic Men. You're also going to be doing a beer option retreat.
That's right, at St. Joseph's Farm. And so the website is just literally stjosephsfarm.com. And if you look under the calendar there, there's a little sign up to actually do a beer option retreat on November 9th through 11th in southwestern North Carolina. So, yeah, if you're interested, it would be great to see you there.
Dr. Jared Stout, thank you. I'm looking forward to the day when all Catholic books will start with the word "the" and end with the word "option." It just seems that the book again, "The Beer Option: What We Can Learn from Brewing Monks." Again, Dr. Jared Stout, thanks for helping us think about how to form a Christian Catholic community.
Thank you. I appreciate the chance.
I am Cy Kellett. This is Catholic Answers Focus. Thanks so much for joining us this time. If you want to share this with your friends, maybe tell them to join Radio Club. Just go to CatholicAnswersLive.com and you can have them put their email address in and they'll get these Catholic Answers Focus each week. We'll see you next time with more conversation about Christian community on Catholic Answers Focus.